Hello and welcome to Talking Balls. With us in the studio this week, Sam Hansen, Jack Rawlinson and Shane Donaldson. And by my side as always, Shahan Jayasinghe.
Thanks Jamie. Lots to talk about this week. F1 is now fully underway and we'll be reviewing the Malaysian Grand Prix and also previewing China, which is coming up this weekend. The Grand National was last weekend and as always, it was a very thrilling occasion. And the Masters climaxed on Sunday and we'll be talking about the debacle of Rory McIlroy.
And also remember, you can follow us on Twitter at TalkingBalls11, and we'd like to hear from you, so if you have any messages for the show, just tag us in a post at TalkingBalls11. And we'll start with the Champions League, and Tottenham played last night, lost 1-0, 5-0 on aggregate. We have a Tottenham fan in the studio with us today, Jack Rawlinson. How do you feel about the game?
To be fair, I wasn't actually as disappointed as I probably should have been. I mean, when I was watching the game, obviously Gomez, absolute howler, but I mean, you know, he's been a good keeper for us, and especially last season towards, you know, when we played Arsenal at home and Chelsea, put in some performances that actually got us to the Champions League this season. I'm just really, really proud to be a Tottenham fan at the moment. I think that given the stature of like the Premier League and like it's so open this year, the fact that you've got like Chelsea, Arsenal, United, City all up there, Spurs sort of trailing behind, but even though the title's probably decided, you know, it's all still to play for in terms of fourth spot, and obviously relegation's really close. But no, I mean, to come as far as we've got, and it's not like we got a really easy draw and we only beat so-and-so mediocre teams. You know, we played Inter Milan, current holders, you know, managed to get 4-3. OK, we still lost the game, but I think it showed tremendous character to come back from 4-0 down. And obviously that's what's put Bale in the headlines and sort of really sparked the interest off in him. We beat him at White Hart Lane. 3-1, and obviously being, you know, 20 years old now, being a Tottenham fan for a good, say, I don't know, 14 years, I've definitely seen, you know, the ups and downs of being a Spurs fan. And I remember when we had like Chris Perry and Gary Doherty at the back, and we were just like 15th, 14th in the table year in, year out. So to you know, harbour a good collection of, you know, English talent, you know, I think we've got one of the best managers in the country. I'll be disappointed to see if he goes to England, but I think, you know, the national game would really benefit. But yeah, no, I'm just really proud. You know, we beat AC Milan. We had FC Twente, who are by no means a terrible team. Werder Bremen got some really quality players there in Bundesliga. But I just think it shows that when it comes to cup football, anything can really happen. You know, as long as you're in it, you've got a chance. And in all honesty, I'd rather us have gone out to Real Madrid than Barcelona, because I think that we would have just been annihilated, in all honesty.
Tottenham have brought a lot to the competition this year. I think they've made it really exciting. Would you, when you look at the season though now, and if you were to say that Tottenham were to finish fifth and not make it into the Champions League next year, having seen what you're capable of doing, would that be a disappointment? Would that be a failure in terms of a season?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, there are pros and cons to everything. One thing you've got to think about though, if Tottenham failed to get that, you know, that fourth spot, is who's really going to want to stay there. I mean, Gareth Bale is only 21, 22 years of age, so, you know, and there's going to be like Barcelona, Juventus, United all trying to come after him. So if they can guarantee him Champions League football year in, year out, then obviously he's got no emotional or sentimental ties to the club. But no, I think it might even be beneficiary if we get into Europa League and we win that and get into the Champions League that way. I think it'd do us the world of good to actually win a European Cup competition and then advance, because no one gave us a chance this year of even really qualifying. When you looked at the group, it was probably going to be, even as a Spurs supporter, it was going to be Inter Milan, then Werder Bremen as the top two, and Spurs and FC Twente to be knocked out of the group stages. But when we finished top of that group, you know, and I think that we've done, and like you said, we have brought a lot to competition. I think, you know, we are one of the most exciting teams to watch, no matter who you support. But no, I just like our whole sort of team management style. You know, we've got young, like I said, English talent, which is harder to come by these days with the amount of foreign players that come into the Premier League. And I think that for the years to come, it will be a learning curve. But yeah, absolutely, if we don't get that fourth spot, then you've got to look at who's going to want to leave and what's going to be done. But yeah, I just don't want City to get it.
So obviously Tottenham crash out of the Champions League alongside Chelsea, leaving United as the only English team remaining in the competition. So Shane, obviously, from a United perspective, how did you do you think they were value for their victory over the two legs?
Yeah, I think we played very well, especially at Stamford Bridge, because it's not very a good sort of hunting ground for us. So I think we did well to come out with 1-0. And yeah, it's all going to be decided at Old Trafford. And again, I think we played extremely well sort of to hold them to 2-1. So I think it's very much deserved. Chelsea didn't play to their full potential with Torres at the first half. I think Drogba should have been on from the full 90 minutes. But yeah, I'm very pleased.
What was your opinion of the sending off, Ramiro sending off? How crucial do you feel that was? I thought it's probably quite a harsh decision. It wasn't a red card, but I don't think that Chelsea were offering a lot before that. So I still think even if they had, you know, kept their 11 players throughout the duration of the game, I don't think the result would have changed that much. But as you say, Drogba, when he came on, he was very influential. He showed a bit of a hunger that none of the other Chelsea players on the day really showed. And I think it's a bit, well, from a Chelsea perspective, it's a shame that he didn't start the game, because I think he could have really, really sort of given the United defenders something else to think about. Torres offered absolutely nothing over the two legs, and it's just obviously the price that they paid for him. There's a kind of a stubbornness, I feel, that Chelsea have to play him just to prove that he was worth the money, you know, worth spending that amount of money. And it might not even be Ancelotti that's actually, you know, wanting to start him. It might be from Abramovich or whatever. You know, when you spend that much money, you've got to kind of just give him the chance to shine.
I mean, I think what you were going to say, yeah, I totally agree. I think that with the whole Torres situation, I mean, obviously, most people have seen that website, hastorresscoredforchelsea.com. Brilliant website. But yeah, I think you're totally right. I think that when you spend that much on a player, I mean, since really Man City have been taken over, the transfer market has just been ludicrous. I mean, like, Andy Carroll was valued at £1 million last year, and he's been sold for £35 million.
Do you think there's more pressure on Torres to score now that Andy Carroll's got a goal?
Yeah, most definitely. I think because, really, I mean, everyone who was watching Transfer Deadline Day, you know, those were the two biggest stories that were constantly being given coverage. You know, people at training grounds, people in Merseyside, people in London. And I just think that, you know, given the scale of the money and how much he's worth, I think that when you pay £50 million for someone, given that Zidane was only £45 million back in the day, and he is probably one of the greatest midfielders in our generation, to be put in the same bracket in terms of value as Torres, who has really shown no... I kind of do feel sorry for him, purely on the basis that, like, it can't be easy when there's that much expectations on you. But that's all he has to do. That's all he has to do, train and play football. And I just think that it was a really bad bit of business on Chelsea's part. I think that they put all their eggs in one basket, and it just really hasn't paid off at all.
On to the Masters. It was a good weekend for Masters. Probably one of the first golf tournament I've actually properly watched, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, I have to say. I found it very exciting towards the end. Charles Schwartzel came with the victory, and I believe Shane, you watched it thoroughly all the way through. So what's your opinion on that?
I did. I watched it from Thursday till Sunday. I watched the whole thing. But yeah, sort of Thursday and Friday was sort of everyone's getting used to the course, knowing what to do, and there was a few sort of good shots and a few sort of leaderboards you can sort of chopping and changing, but sort of at the end of the first day, McIlroy and KJ Choi sort of leading out there, and they thought the way McIlroy was playing, knew it's unstoppable. But Friday saw McIlroy lead again by the end of the day, but surprise was Tiger Woods coming from a 6-under par on the day. So yeah, he's sort of regained his form there, and everyone's expecting a lot going into the weekend. And Saturday saw a lot of players putting well. But Mickelson was finding it hard. He was sitting down there with him, sort of 3-under par, sort of way off the leaders, and sort of hitting it out into the rough. World number one, Martin Kamer, he faded off very quickly. He's sort of down there. Jason Day, potential first Aussie to win, he was sort of up there with McIlroy, sort of finished the day second. And yeah, Tiger again hitting the fairways very nicely, putting, but his putting was very cold and let him down. I think if he had improved that over the day, I think he would have been up there, sort of 1 or 2 under McIlroy, sort of. Good chance, but all set up for a beautiful Sunday with the potential of a playoff. But so Sunday was the big day, which eventually saw Charles Schwartzel take the lead after a sort of amazing eagle shot on the third. Tiger got off to again a perfect start with a 5-under par on the front nine, even with a bogey. But it's all together the whole Sunday. The Sunday was the best day, I think, because we're going into the final few holes with Jason Day, Adam Scott and Charles Schwartzel all fighting for the last few holes. I thought, yeah, it's very entertaining. One of the best Masters in a good long while.
It's definitely been one of the best golfing tournaments in recent years, you have to say that. I think on Sunday, coming towards the end of the tournament, there was potential for a six-man playoff at one point, you know. Obviously, I was watching it with my Union Jack close by my side, and with wanting McIlroy to sort of go on and get the green jacket. It was a real shame to kind of see what happened to him on the back nine. But then, I mean, when you were just looking at the tournament as a whole, you'd have to say, it's at the stage where there were so many people in it and you genuinely had no idea who was going to win it. It was great for golf, really, wasn't it? I think it's a very good tournament. And Schwartz sort of came from nowhere, really. Even though there was like six or seven people in it, they were still focusing on Tiger Woods, they were still focusing on Donald and Adam Scott and everyone else, and Schwartz just sort of rocked up with four birdies in the last four holes, and it's incredible.
It's like when I was sitting watching it, I'd never heard of them. I was sitting watching it, and they were all saying, "Oh, McIlroy," and how he was like failing back a bit, and they were talking about Jason Day and Luke Donald and stuff, and then all of a sudden Charles Schwartzel came out from like sort of nowhere and ended up winning it, and it was well done to him, I have to say.
Yeah, well, I'd say well deserved, actually. I mean, the way he played, like you say, especially the back nine, but his whole entire round, you know, on that Sunday was phenomenal. I think a deserving winner. Like you say, an eagle shot and some fantastic shots from him. He just seemed to be able to, it was like there was a magnet in the ball connected to the hole, you know, he's just fantastic. But it does seem a shame that, you know, I think the main story coming away was just McIlroy sort of falling to pieces altogether. It was a real shame to see, you know, because he'd been, like you say, in great form coming into that Sunday. And then he just lost it. I think once he hit one off into the rough, and from that point on, mentally, he just lost it, I think, didn't he? And a real shame to see, actually. But Schwartzel, I thought, you know, very deserving winner on the day.
I think McIlroy's come out afterwards and said, you know, the one thing that he changed would obviously be that tee shot on 10, which he shanked off. I mean, and also he said that he'd sort of wouldn't focus as much on taking in what the papers are saying and everything, and kind of just try and sort of seclude himself from that whole environment just so he could focus solely on his game. I've sort of obviously got a little, I think we all know that McIlroy's an avid user of Twitter. I think that could have put a little bit more pressure on him, because genuinely, if he's going on every day the night before, and I'm guessing like there would have been thousands of messages, like good luck messages and stuff. But I mean, I think when you get off the golf course, and if you're leading going into the final round of the biggest golf tournament there is, what you want to do is get away from the golf. You want to go back and relax and take your mind off it. And little things like that. I mean, even though everyone meant well by sort of giving in these messages, I reckon it would have kept his focus on the golf still, and I don't think he would have taken his mind off it at all.
And created more pressure as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think obviously he was leading going into the back nine. I think he would have definitely seen a leaderboard, McIlroy, you know, up at the top, and then at which point when you realise he was leading throughout the whole tournament up to then, but I mean, the end goal was still far enough away that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really a reality yet. But when he was that close, you know, like nine holes away from glory, I think then it kind of thinks, well, he probably thinks, well, this could actually happen. Do you know what I mean? And then that's when the pressure kind of kicked in. It's a shame, really.
But I think that's to do with experience as well. I mean, he's still young. I mean, if there is obviously positives that we can take away from it, is the fact that, like, yeah, he's definitely the future of British golf, you know. I mean, we've got Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood, you know, who, you know, fairly good players. You know, they're sort of up there, especially Westwood in recent months, you know, has sort of maybe slipped down the leaderboard a bit. But I think definitely for, you know, that's his first Masters, was it? Rory McIlroy's?
Second.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's only his second Masters tournament. You know, he's got plenty more under his belt. And I think that the more he plays and the more experience he gets, you know, there's no substitute for experience and handling, you know, like you said with the Twitter things, you know, handling that pressure and that expectation. You sort of, it's just a learning curve, isn't it? And sometimes you do have to learn the hard way. But I think definitely next year and future years, he will definitely be one to watch.
True. But I think, I also think in sport, yeah, no one has, regardless of how talented they are, no one has a divine right to win anything.
No, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
I'm sure everyone will, you know, whenever Andy Murray loses a Grand Slam final, everyone will come out and say, oh yeah, no, he's still young, he's still got time on his side. But the fact of the matter is, like, they were saying that about Hemman back at the start of his time, oh, he'll make it past the semis, he'll get in. I mean, and, you know, you can be the most talented person, but I mean, when you get into a position like that, I know that more opportunities might come about, but it still won't hurt, you know, he won't forget the fact that it hurts. It hurts to lose, you know, when you've got the opportunity, you want to take it.
There's still time for Tim Henman, so every cloud.
But McIlroy did it again, sort of did it in St Andrews again earlier last year, didn't he? Sort of took the lead in the first 2 days and again sort of dropped down massively again.
Sure.
But at the Malaysia Open, I think it's very chop and change now, because McIlroy's leading Schwartzel.
Yeah.
Lost his clubs, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe that's a good omen, just get rid of them and get a new set.
Start again, eh?
Yeah.
And actually, talking, sorry, just going to quickly say about, Jack was talking about the sort of British talent in golf. One person who is obviously very talented, but was a bit of a no-show at the the Masters, was McDowell, Graham McDowell.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
wasn't there at all. Really, yeah, which is a shame.
Missed the cut, didn't he?
Yeah.
His form this year hasn't obviously lived up to the high standards as the end of 2010, which is a bit of a shame. He's enjoyed a little bit of a dip, but I think what was actually quite nice to see is even though he missed the cut, he was out on the final day following McIlroy with the crowd. You know, his best friend and countryman, fellow countryman, and he was out there with the crowd, walking around with the whole 18 with him, sort of cheering him on.
Putting more pressure on.
Just tweeting every single shot. Shanked it.
I think the pressure has come on from McDowell when he was partnered up with Tiger Woods. Especially when Tiger Woods found his form, I think it put a lot of pressure on him to sort of perform well and sort of keep up there with him.
Again, a big sporting event last weekend was the Grand National. We didn't have a show last week because of, I'll say, technical difficulties. But we did put Sam, our horse racing expert's predictions up on Twitter. And again, he got it right and made me some money. I know he made a few of our Twitter followers and listeners some money as well.
Yeah, I sadly didn't make myself any money though, which was a bit of a shame. I sent the tips out as with the Gold Cup and didn't back any of them myself. So, but it's quite nice. It's sort of reflected glory, I suppose. I don't know. But a great race. I mean, it was an enjoyable race. It was a shame. Obviously, there's been a lot of sort of backlash from it. There was two horses that sadly died during the race. Ornay and Dooney's Gate, I think it was. Realistically, I think the problem with the National is it's just so in the public eye. You know, from day to day, horses are injured, and often fatally in racing. And it's sort of a sad fact of the sport. It's obviously something that no one really wants to go through, but it does happen, you know. So it's just part and parcel of the sport. But obviously, with the National being so in the public eye, it sort of brought a lot of attention to it. But take nothing away from the actual race itself. It was really exciting and great to see the McCain family sort of... back at the top of the tree, really, in the National, back in the winner's enclosure.
Oh, Ginger.
Yeah, Ginger there. Again, he wasn't very supportive of his son. They said, you must have some kind words to say about your son. Now he said, no, why? So, it was great to see them back in there and well-deserved.
And on to F1?
With a weekend dominated by horsepower. The Saturday saw qualifying, which again, Red Bull again dominated with Vettel taking it at the end. But it was firmly on McLaren and Red Bull. A lot of fingers are pointing at the amount of rake Red Bull have got. So I must explain what rake is. Rake is sort of the difference, the height difference between the front and the rear will cast some more downforce. Sort of Sunday was looking very good, sort of battle between McLaren and Red Bull, see how far it would go. But yeah, Renault surprised everyone by sort of when the lights dropped. They just both shot up there, went up into second with Heidfeld and fourth with Petrov. That was a surprise. No one saw it coming. But people were expecting Ferrari not to do so well, but they did climb back a bit, but it wasn't enough. But disappointed weekend for Williams, who were both out on lap 25 due to mechanical failures. Yeah, with the new tyres, you can tell the Pirellis, the degradation. When you saw the racetrack, you could see the racing line clearly. Well, there's so much rubber marbles all over the track. So if anyone sort of stepped onto them, tyres were cold, that's it. They could be off into the gravel pit, even into the wall. Little pun here. Lap 45 saw Virgin's D'Ambrosio's car turned into custard.
Oh,
yeah, he retired.
And for the listeners, yep, that was written down.
That was a premeditated plan, wasn't it? Yeah.
4 days I've been waiting for that.
Worth the wait. Cheers.
Sort of the big news of it as well was Alonso misjudging the passing over Hamilton, clipping his front wing, forcing him to go into the pit, forced Hamilton to go into the pit as well. So he dropped from third down to seventh, which is, yeah, you could see in the interviews at the end, he was very disappointed. He didn't want to talk. He just gave one-word answers, and he just wanted just to get out of the spotlight and just sort of get into his hotel room, I think. But yeah, all in all, it was a very good race, I think, yeah. But disappointing for Petrov, though, who finished podium last in Australia to retire on lap 54, getting some air and punching his steering column. Yeah, all in all, it's a very good weekend. Just proving it, yet again, proves that Adrian Newey is the Leonardo da Vinci of car design.
There's no rest for the F1 drivers, obviously, just going straight into China this weekend. How much of a sort of a boost do you reckon for Vettel it is that there are back-to-back races now when he's clearly the fastest, so he could rack up, a hell of a lead going, and which might sort of become unassailable later on in the season, do you reckon?
What
do you
think? Yeah, because he's got a 24-point lead at the moment, so that's nearly a whole race he's got in lead. But I think the pressure's on him now. He's got to perform. But whether that's going to happen to McIlroy, he's just going to let it slip. But yeah, I'll be looking at Mark Webber. I think he's going to have so much sort of motivation now. He's going to really push the car to limits.
Well, one thing that strikes me about Vettel, actually, talking about pressure, again, like McElroy, he's quite a young man. He seems to actually handle pressure very well. He seems quite a laid-back sort of a person. Whenever you see him in the pits, he always seems quite jovial and things. But he does seem to handle... I mean, there is tremendous pressure, as you say. He's on what is essentially at the moment the best team in the world. He's the reigning champion. He's got tremendous pressure on his shoulders, but he does seem to handle it very, very well. But it will be interesting to see how he gets on in Malaysia. I don't think he did so well there last year, did he? Or China, sorry.
China, no, not so much.
So it will be interesting to see if he can go back there and prove that he can dominate on that track as well.
Yeah, every year is different at China. No one can tell. No one can predict how it's going to outcome.
So just going back to the rake as well. It's an interesting point you raised about that. Surely that must be within regulation, is it? Or is it?
Yeah, it's in regulation, but like it happened last year with the double diffusers, people were still pointing the finger at Red Bull saying that's illegal. But no, it's all within the rules. So a lot of teams are probably seeing this in China this weekend. A lot of teams adopting that strategy.
That's it, yeah. If you can't beat them, join them.
Yep.
Don't suppose anyone watched the MotoGP, did they?
I wish I had. Oh, which?
It was the Jerez circuit in Spain.
Yes.
That always throws up.
Wasn't that remarkable?
It was a really good race. Valentino Rossi started, I think, about 12th on the grid, and he managed to get, well, quite a respectable 6th position. I mean, obviously now he's riding with Ducati, totally different, you know, kettle of fish. I mean, they've had Stoner in the past, you know, Nicky Hayden's rode with them. So I think they've got, you know, a few more tweaks to sort of jump out. I mean, it's a fast bike down the straight. I mean, maybe not as fast as probably the Honda now. I mean, Repsol Honda have been doing some fantastic stuff with their engine, I know. But yeah, I mean, he's shown that he can ride on any bike, you know, whether that be, you know, with Honda, Yamaha. But yeah, I think that the talking point really was obviously, you know, Jorge Lorenzo and Danny Pedrosa, you know, the two Spaniards, both taking first and second, you know, obviously Lorenzo coming first and Pedrosa, you know, a respectable second. But yeah, the real shock of the race was just how many people were coming off. I mean, every other time there'd just be someone sliding out of shot, and it was, you know, young American Ben Speed. You know, he had a really good race.
He was on for a second or third.
I think he was second or first when he came off. It was just on the hairpin bend on the last stage of the track. Just bike slid out underneath him. I think Stoner had a few issues coming off.
This was the same race Stoner was taken out by Rossi, was it not? Was that the week before?
That was the week before.
So thrills and spills.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the thing about the Spain circuit as well is it has got, you know, probably one of the longest straights, you know, next to the Qatar circuit. You know, the next race is Portugal, which is always good, you know. The one I always look forward to is Laguna Seca.
Absolutely.
The famous corkscrew bit of the track. And I think it was maybe 2 years ago, Stoner and Rossi had a really good battle. They actually bumped bikes, which is good. You know, it took us back to the time of when, you know, Rossi and Sete Gibernau had their rivalry.
Oh.
It was really good. It was really an enthralling thing to watch, and hopefully Portugal will be just as good.
Cool, cool. Well, it's now time for that part of the show I think we've all been waiting for.
Play with Shay!
Yes, it is Play with Shay. And it's currently Shahan 2, Guess 1. So we'll just get right in about it. And the first question is, a couple of years ago, Andy Murray released a rap song. Didn't do very well, only sold 200 copies. What was that rap song called?
Oh, it's got to be something tennis related. Ace, or...
No. I don't know, was it a smash hit?
Oh! It was a lot of racket.
Ah, that was just a lot.
Autograph.
Ah, it was.
Straight in. Listen to the knowledge.
Yeah, and we have a little clip of Autograph, so have a listen.
During Wimbledon, it really gets crazy. My hand cramps up and my mind gets hazy. I sign and sign, but the line doesn't end. Wake me up tomorrow, let's do it again. Autograph.
Oh dear, it's truly, truly.
The one thing I'd like to know most of all is, with Shane knowing that answer so quickly, was he one of the 200 purchasers of Autograph?
He's got all 200, I think. Do you know what I love most about that song? How he puts the same exuberance and enthusiasm as he does his interviews.
And guess one, Shahan, no. So, second question was, last time Barcelona met Real Madrid in the Champions League, it was the semi-final in 2002. Real Madrid went on to win that game and ended up in the final. What was the stadium it was played in?
The final or the semi-final?
The final.
Hampden Park.
It was.
Oh,
straight in there. and that's one each. So this is the decider. This is the way we've always wanted Play With Shay to work out, but it never works out that way. It always ends up 2-0 or something.
Mm.
But yeah, it's one each. So this is the deciding question. I want to know which footballer said this after a reporter asked them, "You've got a lot of scars on your face. Where did you get them from?" And the players responded with, "Why don't you ask your mum?"
Vinnie Jones.
No.
Carlos Tevez.
No.
Get to the list.
Steven Gerrard.
Do you want a clue?
No, because...
Frank Ribery.
No. Just think of a footballer with a lot of scars.
Bloody French.
What?
It was... Oh.
Clue time?
Give him some this.
Good start.
Oh.
Go on, give us a clue then.
Plays in Italy.
Diego Simeone.
No.
Parise.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Zlatan. Yeah, that's the one.
What? It was Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
From?
Famous for many, many quotes, including "I am Zlatan," and that was it. But
brilliant.
Likes to refer to himself in the third person quite a lot. And in a reporter asked, "Where did you get that scar on your face?" And he said, "Why don't you ask your mum?"
Brilliant.
So, don't mess with his Zlatan.
Lovely fella, yeah.
And this will be our last show for the next 2 weeks.
Hang on.
No, we will bring to it. I was going to bring to it. So calm down. This will be our last show for the next 2 weeks. So we'll see you then. But first of all, our very own Shahan will be running the London Marathon.
Indeed. Mm. This Sunday is the big day. Date with destiny. A little bit nervous, if I'm being honest.
How's training gone? What have you done in terms of preparation?
We've gone on a little detox. We've cut back on the booze.
Not the crunchies, though.
The crunchies. We've gone on sky high with the crunchies. Yeah, a lot less alcohol has gone in the system since January.
So. I'm interested by that. It's a lot less. It's not none at all.
Well,
had the double vodkas at the weekend. But during the week, he's been having
double vodkas at the weekend. Yeah.
He refused. He's always,
He refused to come to St. Paddy's Day with us because of the marathon.
Lies.
Scandalous lies.
There's been a couple. I'm not sure this is what Talking Balls was meant to be.
I'll point out the double vodkas was actually a figment of my imagination.
Of course.
We do not induce alcohol.
We do.
And what are you running for a charity?
I am indeed. I'm running for a charity called School Children for Children, raising money for schools in Kenya. So we'll tweet a little post to my Just Giving page.
You will do.
And if any of the followers or listeners would like to donate, then please feel free and I'll be most appreciated. This Sunday's the big day, and fingers crossed this isn't the last time I'm on Talking Balls.
Well, so out of curiosity, have you got a sort of time you've set yourself, any target?
Just finish alive.
I think,
really,
finish alive, hopefully complete it before the guy in like the diving outfit completes it. Preferably before they've taken away the finish line and stuff. Just like a rock up to the end of the line, they're actually setting up for the marathon for 2012. Yeah. Like, oh! It's very
finish
early.
Before the guy asks you to leave, he's clearing up all the debris.
We'll just remind you of our Twitter page. It is at TalkingBalls11. So just got on there. If you don't follow us already, just click follow. If you do follow us, just send us a message. And also, we'll put a link up to Shahan's charity. And
I was just going to make sure you mentioned that we're also available on iTunes still.
Yeah, we'll do. as you heard there, we are also still available on iTunes, so you can download it. And we will put a link up to Shahan's charity on Twitter, and hopefully you can be very generous. And that's all for us today, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. So thank you, and bye-bye.